Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. President Trump is intent on eliminating what he calls job-killing regulation. On Friday, he signed an executive order directing each federal agency to set up a task force to identify regulations that could be scaled back. Earlier, he signed an order aimed at blocking a rule that would have required those who advise on investments in retirement funds to act in the best interests of their customers. One of the president's primary targets is the law known as Dodd-Frank, or the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, passed by Congress in 2010 in response to the financial crash 2 years earlier. President Trump has promised to, quote, do a big number on Dodd-Frank, end quote. Here's what he told business leaders meeting at the White House earlier this month.
We expect to be cutting a lot out of Dodd-Frank because, frankly, I have so many people, friends of mine, that have nice businesses. They can't borrow money. They just can't get any money because the banks just won't let them borrow because of the rules and regulations in Dodd-Frank.
Democrats in the General Assembly say they're worried about the impact in Maryland of cutting back financial regulation. They've introduced bills to set up a watchdog commission to monitor the effect and recommend state action. They're holding hearings on that legislation today, and they've invited one of the authors and namesakes of the law, former Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank, to testify. I spoke with Frank yesterday on a somewhat scratchy phone line and asked him if the Dodd-Frank banking law is repealed, what difference would it make?
Well, in the near term, if it were totally repealed, consumers would be disadvantaged. One of the biggest changes we made was to establish the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, an idea of Senator Elizabeth Warren. And consumers will have no real recourse when a financial institution cheats them or is incompetent to their disadvantage. Typically, what happens is you're talking about maybe losing hundreds of dollars, maybe a thousand or so in some of these transactions. Too little to justify a lawsuit. Consumers will be hurt. The victims of the Wells Fargo credit card scam would not have been protected the way they were in this case by the Consumer Bureau. Secondly, you will have the potential for a buildup of risk in the economy that could lead to another crash. If you deregulate derivatives the way they want to do, if you allow companies to do what AIG did years ago, accumulate tens, hundreds of billions of dollars of debt that they can't pay off, at some point that will cause an economic crisis. It won't happen in the near term, but it will lead to some very likely crash of the kind we had a few years ago.
The Dodd-Frank law is huge. Are those the parts of the law that you think it is most likely President Trump and the Republican Congress would repeal?
Yes and no. The thing I most fear is that they will reduce the financial support that the Consumer Bureau gets. We deliberately wrote the law so that the Consumer Bureau gets a certain amount every year from the Federal Reserve System that can't be reduced by Congress. Where the Republican Congress has the power to decide by appropriation how much an agency gets, they cut the agencies where they disagree with the mission, and in particular, with regard to the regulation of derivatives, it was the lack of regulation of derivatives that was one of the major causes of the crash last time.
Let me interrupt you to ask you to explain to our listeners what a derivative is.
Good point. Derivatives were originally started for commodities. It was a way to hedge. If you sold corn, if you sold oil, and you were worried about fluctuations in the price, you could make an investment which protected you against a wild swing in the price. You wouldn't get an enormous benefit if it went way up, but you wouldn't get wiped out if it went way down. That is, you could kind of prepay for it. In the 80s and 90s, they began to use that mechanism, which originally was for, you know, orange juice futures and pork belly futures. People are familiar with that. They began to use them for purely financial instruments. People were trading back and forth, making bets on purely financial issues. People began to make these mortgage loans beginning in the 90s to people who really couldn't pay it back because they had something called securitization. A securitization meant that I could make the loan, I could make 1,000 loans to people of low income, and instead of worrying whether or not they paid me back, I could package them into a security, and sell them to somebody else, to sell them to investors. And the investors, to protect themselves, would buy something called a credit default swap, a derivative, which would protect them if the loans didn't pay off, the mortgage loans. And people were able to do all that without having to put up the money in case things went bad. What happened was, the loans, as we know, which should not have been made in the first place, and were only made because the lender now didn't have to worry about whether or not they were repaid. The lender was selling them to somebody else. They began to default, and all these securities were now not worth anything. And then they called on these people who had sold them these credit default swap derivatives to pay it off, and they didn't have any money. And what happened was there was all this debt that couldn't be repaid, and that caused the crash in the economy. And what we have said in the law is, first of all, you can't make those loans. We make it illegal to make loans to people where there's very little chance they're going to pay you back. And then we said, and no matter what, if you want to buy a security of any kind, and you then want to sell somebody else insurance about it, you have to put up the money. You have to have the money to back that up. Basically, what we did with these financial derivatives is what Franklin Roosevelt did with stocks. Stocks used to be wildly traded with no money to back them up. They created the stock exchanges. We have done the same now. Derivatives have to be traded on exchanges to the greatest extent possible. And you cannot sell credit default swap insurance to other people without having the money to back it up. The single precipitating event of the crisis 9 years ago was when AIG told the Bush administration, the Federal Reserve, that there were $175 billion in debt beyond what they could pay off. And if they didn't pay off that debt, then other people wouldn't be able to pay what they owed, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a key piece that we have said you can't do anymore. You can still make the bet, but you have to make sure before you make the bet that you can pay it off if it loses.
As former Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, one of the driving forces behind the Dodd-Frank banking law, here on the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. He'll be in Annapolis this afternoon to testify on an effort to protect Marylanders from changes in financial regulation. So, Congressman Frank, I hear you discuss that, and I'm aware that even state-chartered banks are regulated by federal agencies. I mean, the FDIC is the agency that insures banks. You mentioned the Federal Reserve. It sets some of the capital requirements for banks. What can a state like Maryland do to protect itself?
Well, the law helped them with that. Unusually in America, we have two sets of banks. You have national banks and state-chartered banks. In the 90s, when the bad loans became evident, that people were making loans to people who couldn't pay it off, some of us tried at the federal level to regulate that, but the conservatives were too strong. Alan Greenspan was able to block that. So a number of states began to use their power over state-chartered banks to regulate the loans they could give. And at that point, the Bush administration stepped in 2004 and used the federal supreme authority that's known as preemption. The federal government beats the state in any legal argument. That was decided in 1865, finally. And they took away the right of the states to regulate the lending practices of their state-chartered banks and of national banks. The states still could do something with the state banks, but what then happened would be the state bank would get a national charter, and the states were no longer able to regulate the activity of the national banks in their state, the Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, etc. And what we did in the law was to restore to the states the power to do some of that regulation. So if the federal government were to change under Donald Trump the rules about who could get mortgage loans and make it easier for people without resources to get these loans, the states could step in and protect them. The states could also do some of the consumer protections that we are talking about, but there were limits.
Can you tell me more about that? What kinds of consumer protections do you think would be lost if there are major changes in repeal?
Well, you would have this problem of having to do it state by state politically. I guess you could protect Marylanders against the kind of abuse they got from Wells Fargo. The states could rule against these bad mortgages, and they could, I guess, protect their citizens from some of these practices like Wells Fargo did of scamming them by creating fake credit card accounts in their name.
If this becomes a discussion in Congress, as opposed to a steamroller toward complete repeal, Are there changes in the Dodd-Frank law that you think are called for?
Oh, absolutely. Look, any law can be refined. You get experience. You make a mistake or two. You have to have some compromises. Look, there was one piece of the law that I never liked. It was the one that gave the Federal Reserve the duty to regulate the amount that a bank that issued a credit card could charge a merchant for use of a debit card. I think that's purely a fight between merchants, retailers, and banks, and has no relevance to the consumer. I was never for it. There are two significant changes I would make. First of all, I think we were wrong when we said that $50 billion in assets for a bank was the number at which you became so significant that you got special regulation. I think that was too low. I think you can go up to $100 billion. Having said that, I want to make this point. The lead regulator of the banks in the Obama administration, Dan Tarullo, for the Federal Reserve, who just retired, in 2013 said, you know, $50 billion is too low. Let's get it up to about $100 billion. And I supported that at that time. I say that because I have since joined a bank board of directors where that's a good thing for that bank. But I want to make it very clear. I took a position in favor of that long before I even heard of the bank I'm now working with.
You're talking about the too big to fail concept there, right?
We said that banks at a certain level will get extra supervision because they are so big that if they failed, they could cause a problem for the whole economy. And we did say that the level at which you get into that was $50 billion. So that's a fair characterization, a shorthand. The level at which you get subjected to special supervision from the Financial Stability Oversight Council, I now think that should be $100 billion. The other was, we did make some provision in the bill for smaller banks, but it turns out there are things like the Volcker Rule, a rule which says banks can't engage in derivative trading with their own money. We never thought that small banks would do that. They don't do that. But it turns out their lawyers have advised them that they better be very, very careful to make sure they're not in violation, to demonstrate that they're not. In other words, smaller banks are spending more money than we anticipated, complying with parts of the law that we never thought would affect them. And what Tarullo again said in 2013 was, let's just specifically, explicitly exempt them from those. So I would exempt the banks under $10 billion from the Volcker Rule, and I would raise the $50 billion to, say, $100 billion. Those are the two major changes that I think will make the law less of a problem. Now, part of the problem, by the way, that people complain about don't come from the financial reform law you and I are discussing. There are a lot of complaints about the extent to which banks have to scrutinize people. There's the know your customer. There's the limit on how much you can withdraw each month without reporting it, which is what got former Speaker Hastert in trouble. Those don't come from our financial reform law. There are other laws on the books. Basically, laws that were passed beginning in 1970 with largely conservative support, including the Patriot Act, to deal with money laundering that's aimed at stopping smuggling and terrorism. And part of the problem is that our law gets blamed for some of the extra work that's imposed by those laws, the anti-money laundering laws.
Let me just make sure I'm following your point there, because as you know, President Trump and many on his team say that the Dodd-Frank law is squeezing banks in such a way that they are not making loans, that it's choking the economy and costing jobs. Are you saying that's not in Dodd-Frank?
I'm saying it's just not true factually. There is a problem with some of the smaller banks may not be lending as much, but those loans are getting made by larger banks. Lending is going forward. There is simply no evidence that loans aren't being there. The statistics are quite the opposite. Lending activity is flourishing. What we're talking about here is not that loans aren't being made, but the compliance issue, and I should have been more clear about that. With the complaints that the banks have about all the paperwork they have to do, much of that comes from these anti-money laundering. For example, people are familiar with the fact that Dennis Hastert went to prison, the former speaker, because he was withdrawing just under $10,000 a month to avoid it being reported or whatever, and the banks have to go through all this paperwork. I'm on a bank board, and at every board meeting, we have to go through the suspicious activity reports, and there's a lot of people in the bank who work on that. That's got nothing to do with our bill. So I'm talking here not about a lack of loans, but a problem with compliance costs.
Bottom line, what advice are you planning to give Maryland legislators?
Well, I was glad you asked about changes. I do think that we can make it easier on the smallest banks and take some of the burden off middle-sized banks, but otherwise, to urge their members of Congress to fight hard and to carry this battle to the Republicans. I believe when the public understands that they're being asked to get rid of their consumer protections or to allow an AIG to get back in the business of making big bets that they can't pay off and then the rest of us bear the burden, I think we win that fight in public opinion. I guess I'm helping spread that message.
Congressman Frank, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Barney Frank served 22 years in Congress and chaired the House Financial Services Committee in 2010 when Congress passed the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd chaired the Senate Banking Committee. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break now on the record. When we're back, the next episode of More Than Words, the series produced by teens in Baltimore. Stay with us.